guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
And we have a great episode for you guys today. We're going to talk a little bit of news, do some things, and then roll into some of our projects and everything for the Drivers Club after that. Jake, have you ever had a car stolen or anything stolen?
No, not luckily I have not, I don't think.
Nothing ever? You've never had a single thing stolen?
I mean, I guess I have, but nothing like a vehicle that I can.
I've had someone stole my trailer hitch yesterday.
Your
hitch? In the parking lot. It's a brand new hitch. It was on the back of the 4Runner.
Yep. So you're talking the receiver insert.
No, I'm talking about Well, the receiver is the part that's attached to the truck.
Right,
nobody stole that because it's rusted on. Yes. Nobody is stealing that.
That would be difficult. Yes, especially here.
I'm sure they would go for the cat before they would go for the entire trailer assembly. Yeah.
Okay. Took it. So
yep.
That's why I always use a locking hitch pin.
It's just like, what are we doing?
Like, I know, but like, why are if you're trailering anything and you have a trailer hooked up to it, like everyone locks, you know, the trailer tongue. But It's like, if you don't have a locking hitch pin, it's even easier to just remove that and slide it into yours. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. So there's that. That was some
because I did actually I had to buy a new locking hitch pin on the way to Missouri, which we can talk about later in the Drivers Club.
Run away with your New Balance shaped sneaker boat.
It is a offshore racing hull. Like, what do you have against this thing? It's awesome. It is a super unique design.
Hey, I put a minivan on a Ferrari chassis.
Yeah.
So I can have a bunch of people with me.
100%. I am so into this, and I'm going to defend this. I love this thing, and I love the idea of vans on race car chassis, which this thing is, which we're also going to talk about.
I brought that up for a reason. But think about this. Okay, maybe we can talk about your stupid boat right now. Okay.
You want to talk about the stupid boat?
Talk about your stupid boat. You bought a giant boat.
It's going to be.
Pull up a picture of it because I will explain to everybody what it looks like.
Because it looks good and everyone's going to be like, that's a cool looking boat.
Here, let me. I'm going to actually pull up a photo of it so everybody can see.
I sent you the brochure photo, which is cool because it came with the original brochure.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me grab
this. This is a 1999 Envision. Mid cabin open bow, which my wife and I decided we really like this style of boat. It's very unique. There's only one manufacturer that made these, and they're from down in the Ozarks where they're super popular. And all they didn't make them or sell them.
Here's a picture of Jake's boat.
A cheese wedge?
It is a white wedge of cheese.
Yeah, it is a white wedge. Yeah.
Or here's another.
I love it.
Here's the other version. It is literally, you have a sneaker boat.
So it when is you a say boat the sneaker completely. Boat, what I think of is like the small cabin cruisers that like Sea Ray and a bunch of other manufacturers made, where they're very small but tall, you know, and they're
exactly
like not good for anything.
Like.
100%
exactly
not.
100% no. Is.
It's like a flat you know,
what
top
is,
on the
what
gunwale.
Is it again? It's a what? It's a 1978.
It's an Envision.
Envision. What is it envisioning? 1978 Envision.
It's a 99, boat. Not 78.
Now it's even worse. Okay.
You thought it was
any
was
boat
a
made after like 1987 is a pile of shit. Okay.
Wait, that's when I was born. What does that? What does that mean for me?
I don't know.
Am I before or after the cutoff of cool?
All right, let's do this. All right, we have an Envision.
So,
boat
what's
share.
Unique about it? And I am going to explain a little bit. You can see that is a very cool. It's designed by a notorious, racing boat hull designer.
What's his name?
I don't know. It's
how notorious is he if you don't even know his name?
Because I looked it up. I don't care that
is
much
it
about
Don
this.
Aronow?
No, it's not Don
then
Aronow.
Nobody
He's
cares.
Dead. He's dead.
It doesn't
Chris.
Matter.
He's
nobody
dead.
Cares. Nobody cares.
No, it's the same dude that did Mach 1 boats. You know, it's a 24-degree dead rise. It's got the what is it? There's strakes, and then there's also the other one. It's great. And what's okay, so it's a mid cabin open bow. That's why we went and got it.
A
because
what?
It mid cabin open bow, right?
Okay. Do you know so that open bow is the stupidest thing on a boat that you could possibly have?
Says who?
It's
do you know how fun open bows are?
Yeah, for falling out of and getting run over
that's
with the
why,
prop.
You're going to love this thing because you're going to come over. Your girls are going to want to be up front. It has a super, like the bow is super deep. Like you sit and it's like up to your shoulders. It's really a cool design. So it's like.
It's not though.
Because a cigarette
even
boat.
Even if.
An offshore powerboat. And instead of having all that wasted space
look
up
at
front.
This. I mean, the seats are dope. That's like offshore racing seats. That style where
yes,
you stand
it
up.
Has,
does yours have
it
stand
has dropouts. Up? Dropouts, they're okay. called. Yes, it
That's
does.
That's cool.
This thing seats like 14 people because you know Nikki and I like having friends.
Here's the issue. Let me.
Okay. What is your issue? But anyways, let me just finish. Yeah. Rather than having wasted space underneath, right? Of like these performance boats where it's like, I don't know, there's a bunk. You're not going to go down there. This, you go down. There's no like open windshield that ruins the lines of the boat. You go down. There's a little like cuddy area where there are little berths you can sleep, or there's like a pullout porta potty and a sink. And then you go back up the steps.
Yeah,
and you have
I can't
this
imagine
awesome
Nikki using the porta potty. Got it.
She actually
it's an offshore racing boat with like an exposed area with like a hangout spot and like a
yes.
like a
yeah.
Like, no,
look at that.
No,
yeah. All the performance. Dude, you're right. It 100% is a minivan on top of a race car, and I love that so much.
Here's the issue. Here's the main issue with this boat, and really the only issue with this boat is right here.
Okay.
I'm going to pause
Tell
this
me.
Video.
Yep.
It is this
oh,
open
it's a video.
Bow.
I didn't see this.
Yeah, this is an open bow.
So the one thing that I searched everywhere for and got specifically this boat because of, that's what you don't like about it.
It is what I don't like about it because this is A, dangerous.
Uh-huh. It's B, not dangerous.
Absolutely is statistically dangerous. Okay. I looked it up because I wanted to be right. Most boating accidents, most boating accidents are from people falling out of the open bow.
Okay.
100% true. Fact.
Okay, sure.
Number
let
two.
Let me tell you. Okay.
Number
okay,
two.
I'll let you finish.
Lack of performance. Okay. When you put people and have a bunch of dipshits up in your open bow, you can't trim properly and it affects the performance
That's
why of
this
your
has
boat. Number
power trim tabs.
It doesn't matter. Number three, you are going to stuff this thing into a wave and all that water, instead of going over the bow like it's supposed to, is just going to come into the cabin.
No,
that's what happens with open bows, period. These are facts. It is a worse boat.
Facts.
It is.
Those are
a worse boat.
Apply to.
It is a worse boat
than
if it had not an open bow.
For what?
Also, where's the character in this boat? Like, where's the character?
Dude, this thing is like, character. This thing is so unique. They did not make many of these. It's so unique. It has a ton of character. Okay, so what makes this thing so unique and all the stats you're talking about.
Define character. What gives something character, Jake?
Uniqueness.
Uniqueness.
Some type of like story or heritage behind it. And
what's the story and heritage
it's like,
behind this?
It's like the character is basically like flaws, right? It's something that's a, it's, what's the term for unique, but it's like, I don't know, it's yeah,
stupid.
It's, no. Okay. Anyways, what I was going to say, because you need to let me rebuttal myself here,
okay,
is the, those stats that you're talking about are probably, and traditionally for the more common like runabouts, right? Where it's like not a deep V hull and it is, they're just like bounding on the waves. This thing was specifically
Boats
designed.
With an open bow, come out with a disclaimer that you cannot be in the open bow while under power. They all do.
That's not true. 100% they do not say that. Show me that disclaimer. Show me that disclaimer. They never say that.
I'm not going to be
They're
able to
designed
find it,
for that. Yeah. No, you can't be on the rear sun deck under power. That is true. And that's the law. However, this is because this hull, it is specifically designed to go through like 6-foot swells and you like don't even feel it. You will not get thrown out because that bow will not rise when you hit chop. That's what this boat is made for.
There is.
It's awesome. You are going
to
have so much fun. You are going to have so much fun and you're going to eat your words. You're going to love this thing. I'm so excited for you.
I'm
so
excited for you. This is going to take me a second, but most of these boats in any rough water have serious issues. Any boat. And you can say that it's made for it if you want to, but
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a look.
First of all, it's too big. Look at that. That's Holava Inlet.
After this session,
which is notorious.
Look at that. You know what would happen for you? Boom, right there. Everybody in your boat, dead. Dead. They're drowned. Okay. It's over.
Pause the stupid. Pause this.
Go any faster.
Can you mute it?
Oh, first of all, it's not playing for me, but yes, here you go.
Okay. Okay,
so that's a little overboard, but.
Yes, Holava Inlet is notorious, and that's the reason this entire channel exists, because I've watched these fail videos over and over.
Wow, nice.
Is because this is a perfect storm of, like, where the rough seas come in to this inlet, which has a bunch
even
of
even that right there. This is like a similar size to your boat. Creates. And this is an Airnav hull, which is far superior to your notorious hull designed
that is a
by
cigarette.
Guy that you don't.
That is a cigarette, correct?
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm not going over Holava Inlet, and I'm not going to do it because these guys are all idiots. And Holava Inlet is the worst. Like, yeah, it's notorious. That's why these videos exist, and they're hilarious. But
you just have to admit to me that it hurts the performance of the boat.
Which part?
Because you can't, because it throws your weight balance off the open bow. You have people in your bow. Weight balance is wrong.
Okay, but if I have 16 people in the boat, then I'm not going to be trying to go like VMAX in this thing.
You know how many people I would want to have in my boat if I had a really sick boat?
How many?
Two. Me and the other person that we're driving 60 miles an hour with. That's it. I don't care about
anything else. This thing will do 60, no problem. And I am just a nicer, more social person and like people.
Went 60. It's not impressive.
Great. But you couldn't have as many people. And it was a very old boat. It was like smelly, probably. Had a lot of mildew.
No, it wasn't smelly. No mildew.
This thing is
awesome.
Great
shape. Lots of character.
Absolutely love it.
Actually,
offshore
race.
This thing also has character.
Character becomes...
That particular one is offshore raced. You know what else? You know how I know this one has the pedigree? Yes, that chassis. Uh-huh. Anyways, did it have a Department of Homeland Defense, U.S. Coast Guard certification and documentation? Because it is an offshore-capable boat, because mine does.
With an open bow?
Yes, with an open bow.
With the open bow. Show me the U.S. Coast Guard version of your boat with the open bow.
Documented.
That's documentation, not a photo of your boat being used by...
Well, then look it up.
Here's my boat about to head out for open shore race, offshore racing right here. This is
okay,
my
first
boat.
Of all, I don't have control right to here. Share the
See
screen,
this?
Which isn't
right
fair.
Right there. There it is. Oh, man, my picture went away.
There it is. Right
boom.
There.
Chris Kraft XK22 Airnav hull built for offshore racing. No open bow. You could go underneath. There was a little spot where you could lay down.
Yeah, it's useless. Useless.
And you got a great sun pad back there if you have friends,
which
I don't.
Which is illegal
really
to ride on, as you were talking about and got
back. Yeah, because
wrong.
It would be stupid. Because you would fall into the water and probably get
yes, you would, which is why
pieces.
This one makes so much more sense. It's awesome. And also, that thing was probably too small for Lake St. Croix and the river here.
22-foot boat's pretty dope. I drove this thing all the way to Red Wing on the river. All the way to Red Wing and back.
I had a 21-foot boat on the river, and it was way too small. This thing's 30. It'll be perfect.
30-foot boat. You're such an asshole.
What are you talking about?
You know,
it's not
enormous.
Big for the river at all. It is totally
it is
not big.
Boat.
It was, I will say, a little enormous to trailer up from Missouri.
I bet. How did that diesel do anyway?
I hate to admit it was perfect. It was great.
It was great.
Like, it didn't even
it?
Care. It
just
didn't
absolute
care.
Workhorse.
Just doing
absolute
80, workhorse. 90 on the freeway. Just, oh, yeah.
Was it more comfortable?
9,000 pounds worth of like stuff. Just no problem. It was comfortable except for coming out of Illinois, the worst highway like stretch I've ever encountered, because it was like the rutted undulations so that mm-hmm. it got to the frequency where the tongue weight was going like this. And it was like, I swear it was almost lifting the rear of the truck up. So it was like, you know, that was uncomfortable. But yeah,
have
I mean,
you ever
anything
had
laden
a
down.
Bad boat experience with or any trailering experience before?
You're talking Sway? Yes, I have. Yeah, I was trailering a big camper that we rented for one weekend, and you can feel trailer sway when it starts to go, and that's why you need a brake controller, because then you can manually that's what you're supposed to do, you know,
you just touch that and it pulls
you hit the brakes
back.
On the rear, and so it adds drag and will straighten itself out.
I
also
was
the worst things
my...
you can do is hit the brakes up front, because that will increase trailer slate.
Yeah, I had an experience with my super awesome Chris Craft XK22 all original LT1 powered vintage race boat with a ton of character earned.
Oh, well, so it's not character. Even a big block. Not even a big block, huh?
Mm. No, it was actually a Corvette not even motor, a big block. A marinized. Well, I didn't need it. It didn't weigh 70 million pounds because it had amenities for my wife, who shouldn't be in the boat anyway, if I'm having a boat. See, what are we doing?
Your wife shouldn't be in the boat anyways.
I don't know. If she's not okay with getting into the water
even,
to pee.
I don't even know how to argue that. My wife shouldn't be in the boat anyways.
I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so I'm driving. So I had to take the boat. I don't remember what I was doing. I think I was getting the trailer worked on. By
I'm Chris. I don't like anyone. By the way,
turn your mic. Turn your mic down.
Yeah,
just a little
I'm kind of blowing out a little bit. You're getting me all fired up.
I had to take the trailer to a guy that was going to weld it up because I just had I like bunk trailers because I didn't have any dock or anything like that. So I always had to put the boat on, take the boat off, and bunks are great. Anything with wheels is stupid. It doesn't work. Anyway, so I had the spot where the boat would sit on the trailer and it would tow nice. And I had a Cop Tahoe I had the PPV Tahoe.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And I great tow vehicle. Did really well. Rear wheel drive.
Yeah, police pursuit.
Pursuit. Dude, that thing was dope. I don't wish I still had it. I had fun with that thing. Anyway, and so I had been working on the boat. And I had taken, and I had this, okay, so I had the spot on the boat where it sat, where it towed nice. I knew where that was, and I always had the boat there. I knew
how did you, adjust it? Because you need to have
it. You can just pull it up. It's a bunk trailer.
But you can move that. You not have the roll
the tower.
The, okay.
You can move the tower back and forth.
So you
can
adjusted that based on, got it.
Yeah. Because all that stuff's adjustable, or it should be, unless the boat is specifically only for whatever trailer. Anyway, you could adjust it. But what I didn't take into account is that I had pulled the gas tank out. And I had pulled some other things out of the boat before I was taking it over to have it checked out by the guy.
So now
we're going to get to news. Rest in peace, news. Weight distribution. Off. Anyway, so I was on the boat, on the trailer, and I was going 65. And it started to sway a little bit. And I'm like, oh, fuck. And I could feel it. And you can feel it in your body first. You start to feel that you're going back and forth.
It's
and then it
like,
gets worse.
It's like vertigo a little bit. Right? Because you're like,
a little.
Something's not shaking. Something's not right here.
I get vertigo all the time. It's not like vertigo at all.
I don't get vertigo.
So it's just like you start feeling it. And then I just I can't just hit the brakes.
Right.
So I just slowly try to pull my foot off the gas pedal.
Yep.
And it got worse instantly.
Yep.
And it started going. And I don't remember where exactly I was on the freeway somewhere. There's no one around. It got to the point where it was pulling me from lane to lane.
Oof. Yep.
And I am fighting this thing. And I kept speeding up to get it to stop, but then I couldn't slow down. I couldn't slow down because when I would try to slow down,
you're doing
the
95.
Fucking thing would start swaying again. So if I finally, I'm like, okay, I need this thing to completely stop.
Yes.
So I
and then you
floored
can
the truck. Yep. I got going to about 90 to 100 miles an hour before it would straighten up. And then I just the most slow deceleration of all time.
Yep.
And I just got off the freeway immediately and took back roads the rest of the way there. It was, I was getting pulled from lane to lane down the center.
That's scary.
It was with a, that boat, I mean, 30 foot boat, big. Also 22 foot boat on a big trailer, also big. It's a big thing to be throwing around the freeway. That's my terrible experience. Anyway, British police,
a bigger boat and a bigger truck, and I cannot wait for you to come out. You're gonna have so much fun and eat your words. You know what?
I'll have
sit
to wear
there
a disguise,
grumpy on the dock, and going while your girls and your wife are just having the time of their life. Daddy is the greatest, and you go, no, I don't want to admit that this is good. That's what's
no. I'm sure it'll be fun for people that have no taste. I'm sure they'll be able to get on the boat and have a lot of fun. You know, I get embarrassed.
Rather be grumpy and right than have fun and concede.
Oh, absolutely.
Chris.
Yeah. Well, it won't be conceding because it's not like I'll be hiding the fact that I'm having fun. I'll just be like, this boat's pretty interesting. Like it's fast, but I'll be like, but I need to wear a disguise maybe just in case anyone were to see me. And then 15 years later, I'm trying to buy a boat and I go to buy a boat and I'm at a place and there's a guy named John who's actually working on the boat. And I'm talking to the salesman and John, the guy wrenching, goes, hey, I think I saw you out on the Mississippi driving that 30-foot sneaker thing. Don't sell him the cool boat. That guy's got no taste. And then I'm fucked and I can't buy the cool boat that I want. And John won't sell me the boat because the mechanic guy said I'm not cool enough to own. You never know. I'm going to have to wear
this
guy.
This is such a unique, awesome boat. You're going to love it.
It's too white. It needs some candy stripes or something.
What I want to do is take the 90s Taco Bell. It has a single green and purple, you know, like pinstripe. I want to take that off. No. Oh, you wanted me to go to 90s Taco Bell.
No.
Okay. So I'm going to remove that. And I want to do like a wide black, like just classy stripe.
Colored belt line. And just like, it's just so
like a black boring. Or a nice
gunwale. It's like a vanilla ice cream cone, but the cone itself is made out of more vanilla ice cream. Is what it looks like. It's just so boring.
I can see that. Let's keep going. So some sort of black and tan, and then do black and tan sea deck in it.
Black? No, you can't put black on a boat, you dipshit. It gets too hot.
Yeah, not right below the gunwale. You're not going to touch that.
Okay. All right. Well, be careful with black on boats. It fades really fast, and then you can have some trouble with black. Black gel coat's really tough. British police said Monday that they have recovered a Ferrari stolen from Austrian Formula One driver Gerhard Berger in Italy almost 30 years ago.
Wow.
The red Ferrari F512M, which is basically the 512 is a Testarossa.
Correct.
Was one of two sports cars taken from their drivers in Imola from the San Marino Grand Prix in April of 1995.
Wow.
All right. I bet you're wondering what a race.
Yeah.
Old 512 M512F is?
I looked it up for you, Chris. I looked it up for you. So yeah, you're basically right.
I've got a clip to play for you. So you can take a look and then you can tell me about
Let's do that.
I just want you to see what this thing actually looks like.
In the world that have made cars, there is but one which defines the art of the supercar, Ferrari. Ever since the war, Ferrari has been in the business.
Okay, first of all, did you know that they made these wheels in like 15 and a half inches? These wheels right here. So you had to get special Pirelli tires to even be able to run
weird.
Them. Yeah, so even getting tires for this thing is a pain in the ass.
Ferrari.
It's a 15 and a half inch wheel. War, so
Ferrari
stupid.
Been in the business of making the fastest, sexiest, and just plain most desirable cars on the planet. To drive a Ferrari, any Ferrari, is a joy. A fascinating blend of simply...
Do you think that's still true?
That driving a Ferrari is simply a joy.
Is it a joy? Is it still a joy? Or is it just like
a... I'm sure it's a joy. Yeah.
I think
you'd have joy in it almost as much as in my boat.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, the person that bought your boat back and they probably owned a white Ferrari.
Talents and often infuriating faults, too.
Yeah. You can't own a white Ferrari. There's no world, unless you're Dr. Dre.
You're right, because if you're gonna buy a white Ferrari, you should have bought a white Lamborghini.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
It's just like, I don't know, like white Ferrari just screams, I bought this car, but I'm uncomfortable with it, so I got to do something that makes me feel special because the Ferrari just isn't special enough.
Yeah. That's why Lamborghinis exist.
Flagship, a 12-cylinder monument.
This thing is absolutely hideous.
Okay, I was wondering which way you were going with that.
Look at this thing.
It's lack of grace, and this one's hardly for the faint-hearted. But
here's what's great, though.
Loathe them. There is one part of this car over which there is no argument: the engine.
Yeah.
The flat 12 has received the final reworking.
Flat 12.
Yep, that's what the Testarossa is all worth.
At the end of this, there's a little clip of it starting up, so we can hear it.
Well, listen to this.
Why are those exhaust pipes so dirty?
Right? Like, you would think that this thing was
kind of... Did you see that?
They're super...
The whole
super
car was detailed perfectly. Clearly hadn't been driven much, but like the exhaust pipes were like oil stained.
Yeah, it's probably leaking oil. I do want to let me see if I can grab a couple pictures of this thing before, because that didn't really show
the front
photos.
Is hideous because the Testarossa... this is... Yes, so I'll start. This is an evolution of the Testarossa, but like the main thing... is it doesn't have the pop-up headlights. They just grafted on regular headlights, and it looks hideous.
Look at this thing. So, it's so bad.
You can scroll through photos while I tell you about it.
No problem.
The Testarossa's model number, as you were talking about, is the 512 TR, which in Ferrari code means it's a 5-liter 12-cylinder, with TR meaning Testarossa, which literally is just Italian for redhead. 512M, on the other hand, is it dropped the TR part and replaced it with M for modificata or modified. So it's
look
a
at the back end of this thing,
Testarossa.
Jake.
It's really weird.
It looks
looking.
Like you know
they,
what
like,
it looks
pinched
like.
Pinched it.
It looks like it was collaborative with Lego. Like it's like a one of those Lego Technic cars or something where the pieces kind of make it look like the real car.
Quite fit. Yeah, I know what you mean. Like
it's
they
like
did
nothing's
what they
quite
could
there
with what they had. Yeah, so it was introduced in the 94 Paris Auto Show and was released as the final version of the Testarossa, being the last Ferrari to use that very unique flat 12 motor. Only 501 of these were produced, of which 75 made it to the U.S.
So
and apparently one was in Australia, and then
I think
wasn't.
They stole two of them, I think. So this Ferrari was... Dude, it's ugly, right?
It is ugly,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The Ferrari was never found until London's Metropolitan Police Force was tipped off by the manufacturer in January that a Ferrari in the process of being sold to a U.S. buyer by a U.K. broker had been flagged as a stolen vehicle. So you think some guy has been sitting on this car for 20 years?
And then he
years?
Went to sell it.
Or 30 years and went to sell it and was like, and then he got busted? 30
I
years?
I don't know. You'd think you'd be smarter than that. Like the All fact right, that
so
he held
I,
on
I,
to
I
it.
I dug up the original news article to find out what
when
exactly
it was actually
happened.
Stolen or
okay. The Imola tourist bar will not have appreciated the publicity the region received last weekend when both Gerhard Berger and Jean Alesi, were both Ferrari drivers at the time,
okay.
Had their road going Ferrari stolen by a car thieves while in town for the San Marino GP. The Imola tourist bar, blah, 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 blah. The Ferraris were stolen by thieves while in town. Alesi's silver gray 355 disappeared from the car park at his hotel, while Berger's bright red 512 Testarossa, the pair worth around $400,000, provided a much more exciting story as Berger arrived as the thief was taking the car. The Austrian The Austrian ran into the path of the fleeing bandit, realized that the robber had no intention of stopping, and jumped clear just in time. The thief then drove the car at high speed through a small gap to make his getaway, leaving only an inch of clearance on each side. Berger gave chase in a friend's Volkswagen Golf.
Oh, no.
But not even his prodigious talent could keep up with the supercar. How great of an ad for Volkswagen would that have been?
That would have made such a better story if he got him.
Nabs thief in Ferrari with Volkswagen Golf. Oh, no, it didn't happen. The Imola police force seemed to think that the robberies were professional jobs and the two Ferraris were probably on their way to the Middle East to be sold.
Yes.
The force organized Volkswagen. That would have been so great. Too bad it wasn't
that
a VR6.
That would have been really cool. Yeah.
VR6 probably would have done the trick. The force's organized vehicle crime unit investigated and found the car had been brought to Britain from Japan in late 2023. Officers seized the car, which the force said is valued at $440,000, which is twice what it cost new. So, I mean, good for Gerhard. Is he still alive? You should look that up. I don't know. Because then he would have doubled his money and didn't have to do anything. Didn't have to pay any storage fees, nothing. He just doubled his cash. And somebody else stored the car for him. They even detailed it for him and gave it back.
Well,
what a guy.
Yeah,
probably
but
needs a timing
I'm
chain.
I'm sure already paid him out on it. So
oh,
that's not really how
yeah.
that works.
Well, I guess I'm going to guess it was just Ferrari's car anyway that they let him have because he was running. Quote. Oh, our inquiries were painstaking, included contracting authorities from around the world. We worked quickly over the course of 30 years. Including
said
the National
Constable
Crime Agency.
Mike Pilbeam.
As well as Ferrari and international car dealerships in this collaboration. Blah, blah, blah. No one has been arrested. And the second stolen Ferrari remains missing. So what about the broker? What happens with this guy? The guy that bought the car from Japan and is out. £400,000.
Yeah, I have no idea how that works.
Yeah. All right. So I want to play. Like, I was curious what Berger was racing at the time. So I pulled up a clip of the Ferrari V12.
Because what year is this?
95, 96.
Yep. Yeah.
And we're with Gerhard Berger's Ferrari. There's the old road coming in. Now it's up to Blanchimont.
If they ask if they're going to make one stop, it that.
Okay. Look how small this car is and how narrow the wheelbase is and how little there is in front of him in terms of aero compared to the new car.
Yep.
It's crazy.
In another couple of laps time, if you just see just how that works out. We've also got Frentzen in the south.
Look how much he's fighting the car, too. He's driving this thing.
Yeah, he is.
So, and then
I could
I've
just
got,
sit and watch that for the next half hour. That was really
I wanted
cool.
to also play. This is a new clip. This is Carlos Sainz on a pole okay. position lap last year.
Okay.
What do you notice here?
There's a lot less. It like, yeah, there's a lot there's more car. And also a lot less drama with the driving
There's
and actual
so
inputs.
Much less drama. It's almost like the car is driving itself. Now, I know it isn't, but it right. just seems so much easier to
and
drive.
Obviously,
plus, the wine is awfully annoying.
I know.
Just and the like, electric. I don't know if it's like the hybrid stuff charging or whatever that is.
It's
and
yeah,
of course,
B6.
I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole. A little bit.
Okay.
And I was just thinking, like, when was which Formula One drivers had the most skill.
Oh,
like at
okay.
what period of time? So I narrowed it down. I watched this clip, which was like buried deep in YouTube. It only had like 30 views.
Ooh, I'm excited.
I'm going to start it over. Hold on. Look at the guy. You see the guy? Watch the guy at the top left of your screen.
Okay.
That I want it to be me real bad.
The blue leisure
suit. It's a guy
suit.
In a blue suit.
Just, yeah.
Go ahead. Get out of there.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. Drifting the Formula One car.
Just, yeah, the oversteer, the corrections.
So this is Tyrell 008. It's a four-valve V8 3-liter from Cosworth, and it was
this
called
is the
DFV.
Best sounding era. Yep. This
oh,
is
God.
The best sounding era.
Yeah, it's
far.
A V8. You know, you get to some of the cars that are like they have the V12 and they just rev
whiny.
So high, and they kind of just sound like a vacuum cleaner with running on propane or something.
So
it's too.
I know, and I'm reminded too much. Of. Still probably one of my favorite commercials is the Shell Ferrari commercial they did where
yeah.
it's the Formula One cars. And then see if you can pull that up quick
yeah.
where as they're going down, it's supposed to be like almost the same car, but it keeps evolving through time. And what I love about that is you can compare every single basically era of Formula One and the cars.
All right, let me
and it's
up.
Like
Got
the
it.
Late 70s, early 70s is like just my favorite. So good.
Can you hear
maybe,
it? Because I can't.
Maybe not.
No, it's not going to
No, I can't even see it. So,
all right. Well, that's where we stand for you. That's why I download all the
Lame,
clips all the time.
But you
yeah,
know
but
what?
It's
I'm
a great,
about.
It's a great yep. clip. Super great clip.
All right. Let's take a minute here to talk about CSF. CSF Cooling has always been at the forefront of quality products at a fair price with a rich history stretching over seven decades. They provide the best high performance and OEM plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road, from classic copper brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, and Datsuns to vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, Audi, and Porsche platforms, all the way up to new vehicles. Check out their expanding classic series lineup and be sure to check them out at csfrace.com or Chris on social media, where they're always on social media.
Oh, okay.
They always have cool stuff going on there as well. Be sure to check them out.
Alrighty then. Hey, so I found a picture.
Okay.
That actually, it's just a picture you didn't send me, so I didn't find it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to open this or not, but... You sent me
you
a picture.
Found
of your
a picture
boat.
That
you sent
I
a
sent
picture
you.
Of the boat. We're yes. back on the boat just yes. for a second.
Oh boy. Okay.
And this picture, Jake, window. This one. This picture looks to me.
Yeah.
Escape to where you make the most of life. This seems like end of life care pamphlet.
Oh my God. The font. You're right.
Everything.
Find peace in your golden
Jake,
years.
Oh man.
It's so good. No, but your analogy that you used before was that this thing is like, you know, a minivan on top of a race car chassis.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I
which
wish
is
I never
so
said
good.
It. Wish I never would
so
have said
good
it.
Because let's move into news here.
The
have
king
you,
of analogies
ever...
has given a bad one. Should never have said
oh,
it.
By the way, I I have a really interesting analogy in our history episode that we're going to be recording here.
Oh, yeah, that's coming out next week.
Next week. I don't know if it's a good analogy or a bad one, but I thought you'd like it. So
okay.
I'm alluding to that.
There's a question, though, before we get into this. We're going to talk about the Ford Supervan, which has a lot of history and it's super cool. Why do you feel like the Overcrest van is your Supervan? Like, why are we buying an LS swap for the van? Also, why do you feel like it needs a manual transmission? It should have an automatic because it's a van. What are you doing? Like, what?
Okay, couple things.
And no, I have a lot. Overcrest will not be reimbursing you for the cost of this stuff that you have bought on your own volition.
Well, okay, but hold on, because I am slightly concerned the van needs a new motor anyways.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why?
That is part of all of this.
I
was driving it at the rally and it was awesome. And I had a ton of fun and I like really kind of fell in love with this thing because it's cool. It's totally rad. And
hold on one second. I would like to be vindicated that when I said I wanted to get the van, both you and Jeff thought I was crazy.
Yeah,
you thought I was nuts. You didn't want the van. You thought it was a waste of money. Now the van is like the best thing ever.
Oh, it is the best thing ever. And I also would like vindication from you that you were like, don't do anything. You do stupid stuff. And the van is awesome. The van is awesome.
Yeah,
the van was
the
dumb
wheels.
Before. Now it's awesome. All right. So when I drove it, it was super fun. I was doing the rally route and having fun with it. And I desperately wanted to shift gears because it was underpowered, especially like going up the mountains
and coming out of
corners. Right. And full of gear. And so I was like, you know, the column shifter for the automatic, I was like shifting between, you know, the 3 and the 2 and the going back and forth to try to force it. And I'm having a lot of fun, but I desperately wanted a manual to shift my own gears. Cool. Okay.
Because
so that's
you blew the motor
part.
Up. Got it.
Well, it also is smoking a fair bit. And
it
I don't
wasn't
know.
Before you drove it.
Well, that doesn't mean anything.
it sounds
wasn't
like you
before
beat
the
this
rally.
Thing with an inch of its life on
That's
the rally.
That's not entirely true. I put it through its paces, Chris. This was testing.
Yeah, the thousand paces of Jake. Yes.
Yeah.
That's what the documentary
so
of this
I'm
van
like,
is going to be called.
It needs a little bit more power. It looks cool, as we know. And so just like the Driven to Death car, when Jeff had that cool livery put on it, you know, you felt the need to make it also perform well to how cool it looked.
Yep.
So it's kind of the same thought here, right? It needs to perform as well as it looks. And also maybe it needs a new motor. So you might as well put an LS in it that I got a deal on and a manual transmission.
But the manual transmission part is what's hard because
why?
It's not easy.
There's nothing hard about it.
No, it's a van. So the geometry is strange because they didn't make manual versions of LS vans.
Not LS vans, no, but they made manual versions of floor shifting sport vans of that genre. So actually, it's very easy. I can do a complicated like linkage that I want to have a remote shifter up on the doghouse, or all you have to do is you take
the
truck
clutch,
shifter.
I'm talking about the clutch.
There's a clutch cluster for it. And by the way, it's all C10 parts. Like everything
is
easily available. It's cable, but the way to do it is to retrofit it to hydraulics. So there's literally a box of parts on my step right now with a hydraulic clutch.
Have you worked out? You've got it. The van is in its own little garage right now at the Jake
The van is in the haunted garage. You're right. It is.
It's haunted.
I've not worked on it. That's what I call it. That's the distinction.
It seems nice. I don't know. It seemed clean. Didn't seem haunted. I don't know. Okay. There's some new wood in there holding some stuff up.
Yeah. But no, the it's like this will be the easiest thing ever because like it takes all C10 square body truck parts. And so like all the pedal clusters bolt right in. They made a pedal cluster for the van itself. And as far as the shift linkage, you don't have to do the crazy linkage that I want to do. You literally take the stick shift from the truck, which it's like kind of canted back, you know, and you literally unbolt it and put it on 180 so it cants forward.
Okay.
That's all you have to do. We'll see.
I don't know.
Stage one is probably just doing the brakes and bushings, and then it goes to the Redux rally.
All right. Let's talk the real Superman,
anyways,
not Jake's
speaking
wet
of
dream
super fans. Yes. Okay. So have you heard, Chris, of the Ford Supervan?
Clearly, yes, because I've mentioned it multiple times.
Okay, yes. So I knew of this, but forgot about it and didn't really know the history. So over the years, Ford UK has built wild one-off vans for the track that are just like ridiculously fast, right? And the first super van was actually revealed at the Easter 1971 race weekend at Brands Hatch. And the van was basically comprised of a standard press steel Mark One Transit van body shell, a 1971 Ford van body shell that they bolted on to a GT40 Ford racing chassis.
What would the modern equivalent of this be? So it would be like a brand new Ford Transit bolted onto a Ford GT, the new Ford GT, right? I mean, that's basically what the modern. Why don't they do
100%.
It?
100%. What?
Why don't they do something
Why
like
don't
that?
They?
That
sounds, yeah, well, that sounds they have an electric version they just came out with.
All right. Okay, I see where this is going.
We'll get to, but I don't even care about. That's why we're talking about it. But I don't even care about that one. So the original Superman, 400 horsepower mid-engine, and it pushed what was essentially like this brick around the track to a claimed top speed of 150 miles an hour. Externally, the van appeared like a standard Transit, except for the massive wheel flares and the triple blue racing stripes. I do have a clip that I found that you can play. And so this is the original 1971 Ford Supervan. I don't know why it starts this way, but I kind of like it, Chris.
Okay. What is that? That's like a Capri or something, right?
Yep. Yeah, and this is Ford UK, member that built these.
Yeah. Well, we never got to... Oh, there it is!
Ah!
The Supervan.
...looking Transit on display in a Ford truck dealership is the result of a joint promotional campaign between Ford of Britain, truck sales... And
it's tiny, man.
...Raynham, Essex.
Yeah.
Heralded by the name Supervan, it was conceived to publicize the inherent qualities of the basic Transit range, and its creation has resulted in one of the...
Okay.
It's
all right,
so
hold
good.
On. Look at this thing.
It's so cool.
This is... see the Ford stripes on the bottom, like it's a Ford GT, like a GT350 or something like that. The stripes are... pretty dope. I love the...
It's so
I love
cool.
kind of like the happenstance stickers around. Like, it's not like super well planned out. It just says Supervan on it. We should have one just says Overcrest fan in that font.
Yep. Okay. So, hold on. I'm gonna take a screenshot of that because we need to
send it to Jeff.
That's
all right.
Yep. That's our inspiration.
Super fantastic vehicles ever imagined.
Wait a minute.
It runs on hopes and dreams.
In the back.
Oh my God. Look at that beast.
So good.
A 5-liter Gurney Weslake Ford V8 unit mounted amidships on a space frame.
Amidships.
Amidships.
Space age chassis.
Ventilated GT40 disc brakes.
Look at the like camera work here. This is so early 70s.
Branch crossover exhaust system discharging through 2 4-inch megaphone tailpipes. 4 Weber carburetors allowing.
Webers.
Weber.
We got the Webers on here.
Like, we don't need to play all this, but I want to.
Transaxle ZF gearbox. Transmitting the power through Rotaflex coupling
ZF.
To 15-inch wheels and tires.
Yeah.
Where's the driving stuff?
It's coming
look at this
real
guy.
Soon.
He's got like a... That is this... Okay, so this helmet this guy has on right here?
Yeah.
Let me go back just a hair. This is the same helmet that this guy wore in his backyard jumping his BMX bike off of a 2x4 ramp. It is
100%.
The same helmet that he's had since he was 16 years old. Holy cow.
Like
dude, the smile on this guy's face has got to be from door to door.
And that's saying something.
Okay, why did they make this thing? What was the reason?
It was all just because they could. And it was also a promo for the new van. That's all it was.
That thing handles like absolute dog shit. Look at that thing. It
literally
looks
like you're up high where it shouldn't be.
If you took like a rock and threw it down the road as hard as you could and it skittered across the pavement, that's exactly
but
what this
how
thing looks
freaking
like.
Cool is this
here,
thing?
There's got to be a good sound clip right here.
April 1971, at an international meeting
died.
In Truxton before 30,000 racers.
All right, that's enough. That is
Superman
enough of.
Superman then put through a full appraisal program. Performance figures confirmed were 0 to 60 in 7 seconds. And
that's
0
it?
To 100 in 21.6 seconds.
Yeah, that's not really impressive by today's standards.
Maximum speed of well over 150 miles per hour.
Which would, could you imagine? Be absolutely terrifying.
Oh, so terrifying. Just right, body roll? Yes.
I have had enough. All right.
Okay. So that's the original Supervan. Well, hold on, because there's an evolution of the Supervan. In 84, okay, a new Supervan 2 was constructed, and it was the body shell. It was a fiberglass replica of the standard Mark II Transit van, although it was actually lowered a little bit and fitted with a front air dam. Yeah. And similar to the Supervan, the body was essentially just bolted to a full-fledged race car. In this case, a Ford C100 Group C prototype car that had a 4-liter Cosworth DFL V8 with 530 horsepower. So this thing like was run at Silverstone and timed at 174 miles per hour. Then in 94, Ford rebuilt the Supervan 2 into what is the Supervan 3 to perform. It was promoting the new Transit, like the van, the facelift version of the new van. But more recently, at 2002 Goodwood.
Let me share a picture of this thing, because it's... you could just tell how wrong things
are. Because it is pretty wild.
This sucks.
So that's the 2 or the 3?
This is the 3.
I mean, it's still cool for what it is, but it kind of lost the vibe of the original.
It's too
much.
The other one looks like, hey, me and Kenneth, we built this thing in the garage and we put the motor in. We built something like a little ramp to put the motor. Like, it's just... It doesn't feel so homegrown.
I think the distinction for me, and it wasn't homegrown. I mean, it was a factory effort.
But the
distinction is
like
before it was the OEM body that they put on the car. This is a fiberglass, not at all factory body.
This. I look at the other one and go, I could do that. I could do that. I could make that happen somehow. This thing is just like so out of the realm of the real world, that's just too much. All right, keep going.
All right, so look up the new one then, because at the 22 Goodwood Festival of Speed, the Ford Pro Electric Supervan was introduced. So this would be the fourth version, and it's an all-electric van featuring 4 electric motors, producing nearly 2,000 horsepower, going from 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds. So Tesla Roadster, eat your heart out.
This thing doesn't look that great.
The Supervan 4.2, I don't know why they did that, set a new lap record at Bathurst. I mean, it's whatever. It's kind of cool, I guess. The 4.2 Supervan was a rebuild of the Supervan 4 and was built to compete at the Pikes Peak International Hill Climb, where it finished first in its division and second overall, which is actually quite impressive.
It's pretty cool.
It was the second fastest thing, period.
Jake, it has multiple modes. Road for rare cases of normal driving, which I like. Track for balance and speed.
I like that.
For rare cases. Drag for maximum acceleration. Yeah. Drift for spectacular drifting. And rally for optimal performance on tarmac and gravel stages with special tires. I mean, this thing,
I
like okay, so
it is cool.
Let me pull my bias away
really, really fast
of like what I want it to be, which is something old, and look at it as something new. Yeah. It's way cooler than Supervan 3. Way cooler than that. I mean, I'm glad they're still trying to do stuff in the line.
What I was going to say is objectively, this thing is cool because the Bathurst record that it just broke last week was set on February 25th with a time of 1:56.28. It was faster than every other vehicle. It is actually a track record aside from when like Formula One did a promotional lap.
Jeez. Okay.
So that's cool. Like, it actually is fast. It's not just fast for an electric car or fast for a van. It's fast.
It still comes down to the point where I don't feel like that's something as a guy, I could do it. The old one was things have gotten so complicated that I can't wrap my mind around doing anything like that. I mean, maybe the next generation that comes up under me and they're around electric cars more and they're doing these things more, they're going to have an opportunity to learn and grow up with this stuff and maybe do some of these swaps and EV stuff. It's just, I can't. It's just not going to be for me.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
Do you want to talk about your Apple car, or should we move on to something more exciting?
Well, the Apple car was something that's been in the work for like 10 years. It was 8 years, 10 years.
Has it ever actually been in the works, or was it always just something
secret
that
program,
we thought 100%. Was happening?
Secret program. There was even talks between Elon and Apple that Apple would buy Tesla to like get a leap ahead. I mean, they were in pretty serious talks. And I mean, they have spent $10 billion on this program. Gone down the drain. Ugh. They removed everybody from the car program and put them on AI, which I don't really understand how that's going to work, how that translates to one to the other. But I found a picture of the car. Thought I would share it with you real quick. This is it right here. It's as you can see, it is an Apple car with an Anker battery pack on top. And I don't know that I wonder if they would have like a weird charging cord for this thing. What do you think? That nothing would work with nothing else.
It'd have to be proprietary, 100%.
Proprietary charging cord. Thing would be dead.
No headphone jack. No headphone jack.
You'd have to charge it till at least 20% before you could drive it. It wouldn't let you do anything like that. It would. Yeah, you'd have to put your Apple face on it to get it to unlock the doors, all this stuff. So maybe it's for the better. Although, if you thought about like having a true, like Apple CarPlay is really good. I love Apple CarPlay. It makes being in the car. Although let me watch Netflix if I want. Don't tell me what to do, right? Like if I want to have Netflix playing for the passenger or whatever, don't make me do the thing where instead I'm going to take my phone and set it in the instrument cluster and watch Netflix that way.
Do that.
Probably not.
I retrofit a Apple CarPlay like module in the S5, mm-hmm. the banana yellow S5. And that one you can, because it's like an aftermarket, you can like stream your video through it.
Yeah, that would be the way to go. Like, just let me do what I want to do. You know, let me like face my own consequences and go to jail or whatever. Let me go to jail if I want.
Yeah, I guess. Okay. I have another news story talking about electric cars, mm-hmm. which I want to start out by saying, I think one of the reasons we kind of have this negative reaction to so many of these new electric cars is they feel so inauthentic, right? And we've discussed this before, how, you know, people are drawn to many aspects of traditional combustion cars that just are completely absent on new electric vehicles. One of the most prominent or glaring in its absence is, of course, the noise that we've all come to love from our favorite combustion engine, right? The rev of the motor. Well, guess what, Chris? As Dodge is readying what it's calling its, quote, first all-electric muscle car, it has recently patented an absolutely cringeworthy new feature. We already heard of their Fratzonic chambered exhaust or fake engine sound generator, multi-speed transmission. Which part? I haven't even gotten to the most recent part.
Oh, go ahead. I'll let you get to the...
Okay, so the Fratzonic chambered exhaust. That's the fake engine sound generator.
Months and months and months ago, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So that's not new. That's not the news. And they also had their Erupt multi-speed transmission, which we didn't talk about, but that's not new either. That was supposed to simulate the sensations of shifting. So basically, they're just introducing, like, you know, jarring forces, which is silly to me. However, in an effort to recoup that true stirring in your loins, Chris, that only a muscle car can provide, Dodge is releasing what they call the Active Vibration Enhancement System
by Hitachi.
AVE.
By Hitachi?
Yes. Yes. I'm glad you went there because, yes, of course. Yeah. So expected to be released in the new electric Charger Daytona, the system would use multiple sensors to monitor vehicle conditions in order to generate vibrations to the chassis.
Okay, here's my actual problem with this. My problem with this is it isn't real.
That's what I'm talking about.
What can we do with these cars that's real that stimulates our bodies and minds? Right? What can we do that's real? What part of the thing is real? And if it doesn't have it, then it's not as good.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
The way I think about it is like if cars were just, we had no benchmark, if cars were just invented tomorrow and we had this tech, we wouldn't want them to be noisy. We wouldn't want them to vibrate. We'd want them to be smooth, right? Like all of these things that we're trying to hearken back to that now is inauthentic because they're fake and synthesized, they were not engineered into the car. They were byproducts of like compromises that were made, right? A muscle car shakes and makes that noise for performance.
Because it's a pile of shit.
Right, that too. But like, it was a byproduct or a compromise for luxury or for comfort because they wanted to make it more fast. Or, you know, that's the only reason you don't have really, really quiet mufflers, at least back in the day, was, you know, for back pressure. And then that got associated with performance and speed and cool. So then they played that up. And so that's what they're doing here, is they're trying to retain that. But none of these things, like you're talking about, well, is there a reason that it could vibrate instead? No, there isn't. And we shouldn't try necessarily to incorporate that because it's not part of it. Like, it was never designed to vibrate and make that a muscle car. It was just a byproduct of it, right?
Right.
What bugs me is it's the inauthentic noid of it. So, anyways.
It needs to earn something on its own. I want to move on. Agreed. I got one more story and then we're going to shift over to doing some driver's
club stuff. Hold on. I do want to say, though, that by the way, that Fratzonic chambered exhaust, do you know what that is? That's said to create a, quote, visceral dark matter sound profile. Just so you know that that's what it was.
Is it? What's dark matter? Dark matter is
like the hypothetical. In astronomy,
dark form of matter that appears not to interact with light or an electromagnetic field.
Right.
It's like just the absolute vacuum and a negative space of space. And that's
right, which is kind of ironically and appropriately named since it's not a real sound. So I guess, sure.
Sure. All right. Jake, in 1985, the average age of passenger cars in the United States was approximately 8.5 years. In 2024, the average age of a passenger car is estimated to be 13.5 years. Looking ahead to 2029, it's projected it will reach 14.5 years. It appears that the landscape of affordable cars in America is undergoing a drastic transformation with the demise of budget-friendly models like the Mitsubishi Mirage, Kia Rio, Nissan Versa, et cetera, which honestly none of us want anyway, but I still think it's important to have them along. These vehicles, along with others in the sub-$20,000 category, have been sent to the big junkyard in the sky, marking a significant shift away from the affordability in the affordable automotive market.
Right.
Tyson, and a lot of people blame this on COVID, but Tyson Jomini of JD Power points out that this shift predates COVID, with automakers prioritizing higher priced models and adding more features to increase transaction prices. Even traditionally affordable cars like the Honda Civic now come with a hefty price tag of nearly $25,000, making them less accessible to the average consumer. Despite the increasing average vehicle transaction prices, there is a glimmer of hope. Average prices are forecasted to decrease over the course of 2024. Yeah, I don't know if I believe that. I think they're going to stagnate. One thing that I would like to note, that everybody says inflation is coming down, but inflation being less than it was the previous month still means, like, if we go from 8 to 4, it's still 4, you know, it's still inflating. As affordable cars become scarcer, there may be an opportunity for automakers to fill the gap. Chinese automakers in particular are eyeing the American market, which they have no chance of doing. Biden's probably going to lose, and Trump's, not that either choice is good, just stating a thing. If Trump wins, there's no world in which the Chinese automakers are going to be bringing cars over here. It's just not. They're not.
You're right.
The tariffs, the rules, regulations, they're not going to allow it. The automotive manufacturers in the United States, GM, Ford, Chrysler, whatever, they're not. It's not going to happen. So, Chery, one of China's largest automakers, is considering a return to the U.S. market after previous failed attempts. They would have to, by the time all the costs get integrated with the tariffs and everything like that, they would make money.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I did a little bit of research to find out where cars were at in the 80s when adjusted for inflation. I couldn't figure out, like, they didn't, like, if they were more expensive or not. There's a lot of models and trim lines, and I was just trying to figure out, there's too many variables. So I chose to focus on affordability based on average income to see where we've been and where we're going, kind of. So the affordability ratio, which is basically how much a car costs based on average household income. Affordability ratio for the Hyundai Excel, which was like the cheapest car other than a Yugo GV. The Yugo GV was also for sale, but obviously they don't make those now, so I didn't have a comparison. Was 21%, and this is for average household income. So 21% of your average household income of $30,000 would be spent on a car. 21%. Okay. The affordable ratio for the cheapest modern Honda available today, 20%. So it's not that much different. So I was thinking, okay, so that means that it's fine. You know, we've had inflation. It seems like things are really expensive, but they're not. But then I wanted to try and see, like, think about like a wealth gap between like lower class, middle class, and upper class, and see how affordable cars are for people in the lowest 20th percentile of household income. So for the Hyundai Excel in the 80s, the average income was like $12,157. 41% was the cheapest car you could buy. The Hyundai Excel was 41% of your annual income. Today, it's 49%. So we're actually creeping up to 50%. So it's actually getting harder to own a car if you have no money, which makes sense. But just in terms of relative to where we were in the 80s, the cost of car ownership.
That's not as bad as I expected, though, to be honest.
50% of your income? Pretty bad.
I mean, it's terrible.
So average cost of a car in 1985 was $9,000. In 2024, the average cost of a car is $40,000. In 85, that means the average cost, if you're poor, was 74% of your income. Now it's, so I don't know, maybe I screwed up my math here. So it was 20%.
Right.
Okay. In 1980, I'm not great at math, so I'm just trying to do some math here. In 1985, the average cost, if you were poor, was 75% of your income. That doesn't make sense. We're going to leave that out. I don't know what those statistics are.
I didn't write this down very well.
I think this is when I was wondering where you were. I'll blame you. I'm just saying, as you go back and look at the poverty scale, it's becoming harder to own a car than it was back in the day, even if you were poor. And it's only going to get worse as cars get more and more expensive. All right.
To maintain, Chris, like that's
cost of ownership was something that I was going to get into, systems. But I ran out of time. I know what it was. Let me just reel back here. This is the average cost of a car, not the cheapest car.
Let's do it.
That's what this is. So in 1985, the average cost of a car was $9,000. In 2024, the average cost of a car was $40,000. So if you're buying the average car, not the cheapest car, the average car, in 1985, the average car would cost you 74% of your income. Now it's 110% of your income. And even if you're in the middle class, it has jumped from 38% to 51% of your income.
Wow.
Okay. So that was kind of my capstone for that. Sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
No, this stuff is getting too
expensive. We've piled on I was trying to figure out like how much all these different things would cost that we've added, like screens and airbags. Like, look, airbags, pretty great invention, but
why should I have to pay for an airbag?
Why should I have to wear my seatbelt if I don't want to wear a seatbelt? And I think it's in New Hampshire. You don't have to wear your seatbelt if you don't want to. It's on you. Like, why do I have to have all these things? Huh. Every car comes with air conditioning and power windows now. I don't want any of that. What if I just want shitty cloth, manual seats, no airbag, manual transmission, blah, blah, blah. And I say this like people would actually buy it. The thing is, they probably wouldn't. They'd rather take out 96-month loans at 9% interest and pay $50,000 in interest over the course of however many years, just so they could have all the bells and whistles and not have some strippo car. We've had this kind of slow creep, right, of like all these little things that we're adding onto the car that now you can't not have them. I'm even guilty of this with CarPlay. I put CarPlay in the 4Runner because I don't want to have a phone suction cup to a window. So I'm guilty of that too. But man, it's getting really expensive to own a car.
You know, though, what hasn't crept up in inflation at all and is still the same price as it was?
Are you trying to sell me on raising the price for the Overcrest Drivers Club?
No, I was actually going to talk about Petrolbox, but also that.
Yes,
Petrolbox. Monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiasts. They have a monthly service. It includes tools, detailing supplies, apparel, garage gear, stickers, publications, t-shirts, pins, collectibles. It's a curated selection of latest, greatest gear in the industry sent right to your doorstep. There's two different levels to choose from. They are still the same price as they were when we started doing this. Yes, for less than $20 a month, $19.95, you can get the Petrobox or the Petrobox Premium. Gets you even more gear for $39.95, also the same price. Check them out at mypetrolbox.com. And you can use Overcrest when you get there as well. Get a little discount.
All right. We are going to roll into our Overcrest Drivers Club only section. You can join the Drivers Club by going to overcrestproductions.com/drivers club, where for just $5 a month, you can get this exclusive content and more. Want to remind everybody to join the Discord if you haven't. We're actually going to be running a contest over on the Discord. It's the first mention of that. So get over there so you can participate in the content contest and get some free stuff. We'd love to see
what's
you over
the contest, Chris?
I'm not telling you yet. We're going to announce it on the Discord. If you want to know what the contest is, join the Discord. We'll put the link in the show notes. And if I didn't, send me a message and I'll give you the link. I may forget. All right, that's it for now. We will see you guys next week.
Take care.